That is Jesse Ware with Midnight. You're listening to The Morning Brew on Radio 3. Judd Boaz sitting in for Phil Whelan. I'll be here till 1, and I'm joined on the line by Morris Mizalowski, business futurist. How's it going, Morris?
Yeah, going really well.
Now, we were supposed to talk last year or something, and something came up where we weren't able to speak, and I think it was at the start of December, and I was going to ask you, oh, this Bitcoin, it seems like the price is going up. I think if we had talked, I'd be a millionaire by now. You would have told me to buy in, and I would have been a millionaire.
Yeah, I probably would have. The only person who didn't take my advice was me.
Yeah, it's funny how that works.
I mean, I'm the plumber with the leaky taps. Bitcoin's been really interesting. I mean, I know your listeners have had it to death, and we've all talked about it to death. I mean, one of my predictions for this year is I think Bitcoin, not that Bitcoin will disappear, I just think it'll become a non-topic very quickly, somewhere in February, March. Because Bitcoin itself is really old technology. It's one of the first of the cryptocurrencies around. It celebrated its eighth birthday about 2 weeks ago. And there are a ton of other cryptocurrencies. There's hundreds, literally, of other cryptocurrencies that are far better, far easier to use, have whatever feature makes them more interesting. But this particular thing, because it's been around for so long, just caught the imagination of so many people. And as you've alluded to, the share price just gone ridiculous.
I tell you what, hopefully by the end of the year, we'll all have bought in and we'll be able to fly you to the Radio 3 studios in your own private jet instead of calling you up.
Hey, now we're talking.
Yeah, now we're talking.
I finally found a purpose for Bitcoin. I hadn't found it up till now.
And I do want to ask, I've been asking all my guests so far, you know, we're a couple of weeks into the new year. How's that New Year's resolution going, Morris?
I don't do New Year's resolutions.
You don't do it at all?
No, never have. I don't believe in them. Look, New Year, I love New Year as a futurist because everyone wants to talk about the future. Yeah, so we're all talking about next year already and we're talking about what we want to do ahead. So I love it for that. But I'm one of those heretics that just don't understand why we have to be so dogmatic about dates. You know, why does it matter so much? We should just be doing new stuff, wonderful stuff all the time. We should be promising ourselves to get better or be better or do something we haven't done before or eat that food or go on that holiday. It doesn't matter what time of year it is.
Your resolution to not have a resolution, you're holding fast on that. I like it.
I have for a long time. Maybe that's what I'm doing, yeah.
Now, I want to talk, so if people don't know, you're down in Australia, down back in my homeland. And it's that time of year where the kids are starting to get ready for school, get back to school, and that's what we're going to talk about a little bit today, the youth of today, these kids.
Yeah, we are. We absolutely are. I mean, in Australia, it's summer. Our kids have a long summer vacation. They start somewhere around December, and it carries through till end of January, early February, depending on the school that they're going to. So lots of parents now are putting their mind towards getting rid of those pests out of the house, putting them in uniforms and school shoes and buying them books and pushing them out the front door. And I love it this time of year to think about the kids that are going into prep, their first formative year of school. What will the world be like by the time they get out? And this year's prep kids will be out in 2031, and it's going to be such a different world.
I mean, you hear it so much, but, you know, the statistic that most of the jobs that those kids will be doing don't exist yet.
Yeah, look, that's absolutely true, and I've said that for years and years, and you're absolutely right. 70% of the jobs they do won't exist, but I don't think jobs will exist in the way that we know them today. We're trying to prepare them for a world with the best of intention and the most love we can smother them in, but we're really not doing them a service because much of our thinking and much of the education system just will not get them ready for something we don't know anything about. And it's not that they won't find jobs. The 9-to-5 job that most of us grew up with, previous generations, just will not exist en masse in the way they did before.
Even something as basic as, you know, I don't know how many kids aspire to be bus drivers, but maybe there's a kid out there that would love to be a bus driver or a truck driver. A lot of those jobs won't be around because of, you know, self-driving cars and all that stuff. Even a basic job like that, then it's not going to be available to them.
Well, it's not just bus drivers and the checkout people in supermarkets. It's also all of the routine jobs. Look, we're not going to need bookkeepers. We're not going to need many people whose jobs are fairly obvious. And by that I mean that you can write an algorithm. You can go to a piece of technology, a computer, and with a bit of effort, you can figure out what they do and put it together and write a program for it, and it will then do that instead. So we're going to see lots of those jobs disappear over the next couple of decades as we mechanize for the first time ever in humanity. We've spent the last millenniums mechanizing physical work. We're now mechanizing brain work. And that's the big holy grail for the next two decades, is to get a lot of those routine things that come out of our brain into a piece of technology so it will do it for us.
So Is there a solution in mind, Morris? I mean, you talk about all these jobs disappearing and being automated and that sort of thing. Is there a bright light at the end of this tunnel?
Look, I always think there is. To me, it's never an oncoming train. The reality always has been in humanity. Look, if we had radio going back thousands of years, I'm sure we would be saying the same thing when we invented fire and we invented flint and the axe and we started herding together animals so we didn't have to chase them. In other words, jobs have disappeared forever, and we have always, as humans, never been satisfied with the way we did things. We've made some things redundant, which were once wonderful and purposeful, put food on the table and were a career for decades, centuries, have just disappeared because we find different ways to do it. I'm convinced that it will be the same now, that what we're finding is that there are new jobs, new industries, new ways of being, new ways of making money. And it's really uncomfortable for those of us that have a job that's historical, because the way we used to do things just won't be the way it's done anymore.
Yeah, if you're trained in making floppy disks and developing photos, you're probably not looking so great. But a lot of the fear comes from parents that say, oh, what are my kids going to do? You know, they're not going to be able to have all these jobs. I think we underestimate the resourcefulness of people to just find something to do.
Well, something to do is a really interesting topic, because I think we're going to have to find something to do. We will find work, and work to me is task-oriented. So these kids that are coming out of school in 2031 will more than likely have about 40 or 50 different income-producing activities in their lifetime, if not more. Now, that's not to say they can't hold a job down and they won't find them, but it's more likely that they'll do several things in a day or a week, and each of those will bring them a different form of income. And they'll most probably have a portfolio approach to making money, but they'll also have a very different approach to not having to work 9 to 5. So they might go on holidays during the week, or they might take a couple of hours to play golf or tennis or cricket or whatever else. They might, if they're married or have kids, go and watch them for an hour or two. It's going to be much more fluid. We'll be able to come in and out of work as we need to, and our lives will not be so boxed as they've been in the past.
So I'm not going to work at, you know, the toilet factory for 60 years and then get a watch when I retire and that's the end of it, that's my career.
No, look, those days are long gone. You're not even going to get a cake at the end of it. If you stay somewhere 4 or 5 years, people will wonder what's wrong with you. And it really is a very, very different world. It's, as I said, really uncomfortable for people that just don't get it, don't know it, and are used to a very different way.
But you're right, these kids are going to grow up sort of expecting that, and they'll grow up in that world, so it won't be as big a deal for them.
Well, they're going to create the world. That's the most interesting thing, that they will really have to create this world. I don't think these kids will actually use technology. I think they're going to be technology. They will have it around them. It will be so ordinary to them, they will not understand why their parents and their grandparents keep going on about it. The same way as today we don't talk about electricity and gas, it just exists. We just do stuff with it. Nobody gets really excited by the fact you can turn the switch on and it's there. Technology is absolutely at that point for these kids. It just is. Why do people keep talking about it? They are going to understand the parameters of using this. To them, being physical and digital at the same moment makes absolute perfect sense. They're doing some work in the physical, and while they're doing that, they're also looking inside a virtual world. How else would it be? In this world, that's where they're going to make their living, and they're going to have to create that because it doesn't exist yet.
Man, I saw the new Blade Runner. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
I do want to ask, though, and maybe this is more of an economic than a technological thing, but a lot of people are saying with all the automation and the, you know, AI girlfriends and all that, what about a universal basic income for everyone? Is that a possibility now that if everything's going to get automated and there aren't enough jobs, maybe we just have to start paying everyone to do their own thing?
Joel, I hope everybody was listening to what you just said, because I think that's the reality. This universal income is what we're going to have to do. It's not because our kids won't have a job necessarily, in the sense that we are used to it, going historically back, but it's the notion that we're putting another 3 billion people onto this planet in the next 30 years. We are going to have a lot of people on the planet going into middle class looking for work, and in the traditional sense, we won't have it. For me, it's absolutely what you've just described. The notion that instead of us paying out pensions and tax reliefs and doing all the things governments want to do to make sure their citizens have a reasonable life, we put that all into a pot. We somehow divide it up and we make sure everybody has a base from which to live. There's enough for them to sustain themselves. And then if you want to do more, you're empowered to do more, to make more, to earn more, and to have more. But to me, that universal income, and I'm talking 2040, 2050, just has to be a reasonable conversation we're willing to have.
You know, immediately you start saying giving out free money to people, people are going to lose their minds.
And they do. I mean, every day when I have this discussion, that's exactly what they do. And they're quite right. But I'm not talking about some hippie commune where, you know, we all pull stuff in. I'm talking about a society that collects money anyway, that gives money out anyway. We do these things for our citizens. We do it for ourselves. For most people in most countries, at some point in their life, they're taking from that communal pool. And even if we're not, we're sending our kids to a school that's paid for by taxes, or driving on roads that are paid for by taxes, or using infrastructure paid for by taxes. So I'm suggesting that we don't collect anymore, we just divide it differently. And it's not easy menu for this. It's not as if it's been written before or done before. Countries are trying it at the moment. So we've really got to rethink what it is. And again, in 2018, that's a difficult conversation. By 2040, it's going to be an imperative conversation. We will just have to figure it out. So I would like us to do it way ahead, to get ready for it slowly.
It's easy to dismiss it until, you know, all of a sudden a replicant takes your job and then you suddenly need the basic income.
Yeah, well, Arnold Schwarzenegger comes along. And nowadays, look, he could be president. Anything's possible in America.
I think Oprah was going to take a stab at it, wasn't she?
Yeah, she will. And she'll definitely like this. I mean, she's definitely into this universal income.
I think she has a few squillion tucked away. I don't think she's going to be needing that universal income herself, though.
No. In fact, maybe she could subsidize a whole lot of other people having it.
That might be an idea. So what else is happening? You got the kids going back to school. Maybe you should send them with a book on cryptocurrency and JavaScript coding or something. Maybe that will be a bit more useful than what they're going to learn at school these days.
Yeah, it most probably will be. What I love is that I'm actually having conversations with kids that are able to tell me, and I don't know enough about this era, who are able to tell me chapter and verse about what's happening around cryptocurrency. Again, to them, it's ordinary. As where I'm watching my mates who are much older, who are trying to come to terms with it and understand, you know, is it a fad? Is it something real? Does it have purpose? So the kids are right onto this. And again, that's why they're going to have to invent this stuff. They're going to have to create their world.
Absolutely, mate. Anything else on your mind before we let you go?
No, just generally some really great stuff. CES finished up last week, and that's the usual electronic show. Phil and I talked about it. There were some themes that came out of that. And the big theme that came out of that for me was artificial intelligence. Don't believe it exists. That's where computers can think and do everything. I don't believe it exists because computers aren't that clever yet. They're just very fast at doing things and can bring together a whole lot of information quickly. But what came out of it was that Google and Amazon are really head-to-head now on trying to get us to use all of those smart speakers in our home and to get rid of keyboards and mice, and it seemed that everything pushed back to that.
That is scary, and I tell you what, there's a chess app on my phone that I cannot beat for the life of me. That AI has me stumped. It's been smarter than me for a while now.
Yeah, it's incredible. It really is incredible. But again, only because it thinks fast, it knows all that information, is able to pull it out really quickly. Artificial intelligence is what we've seen in our science fiction. It's where, theoretically, computers can think for themselves. They've been taught the basics, but they can make up the rest. And we're not quite there yet. I'm not sure if I want us to get there.
We'll see, mate. I'm sure you'll be covering it with us on Radio 3 when they eventually take over.
Yeah, look forward to it. Or at least a facsimile of me by then anyway. Most probably it'll be a bot called Morris rather than the real me.
I'm going to feed in 600 episodes of this show, and you'll be able to just pass your language into sentences you probably would have said.
Hey, and that can be done already. We already have bots that can do that. not by verbal, but by writing. In fact, Reuters last year put out about 20% of all of its articles that it wrote using a bot.
That's scary too.
It absolutely is. Now, those were the financial, they were the fact-based articles, the things where it was obvious what had to be said, and the language was well known. As you said, they fed in the parameters of their style, and all of the basketball or the stock exchange or whatever else came through, and it was able to write articles. And we've been reading them. I mean, we've been reading them for the last 4 or 5 years and not knowing it.
That is very scary. I mean, you thought if you're a journalist or a writer out there, you think your job's safe. Maybe just hold your horses. Maybe look into you know, diversifying your portfolio as well.
Look, I think communication is still going to be a really important tool, and I don't necessarily think we have to worry about getting into the field. What we need to remember is that the way to continue to be in the field is to be human, is actually to write the opinion pieces, is to state an opinion, is to be able to talk from a very human viewpoint. The articles I was referring to are not that. They are a collection of information. If that's what your journalism is, and that's not what you do, it's not what Phil does, and it's not what HK3 does, but if that's what it is, then that most probably will disappear quickly. But the opinion piece is the humanity. That's not going to go away quickly.
Yeah, the further away you separate myself and journalism, probably the better for your own credibility, mate. Boris, thanks so much for joining us. Lovely talking to you.
A pleasure.
All right. He'll be talking to Phil, I assume, next time, but as always, great talking. Morris Mizalowski, business futurist. We've got some Jesse J coming up next. It's The Morning.